Ladies and gentlemen, friends, and open-minded people, wherever you live across the United States of America, Europe, and the entire world, this is David Duke, and this is Human Rights Radio, and we are facing, in the next few days, one of the greatest dangers to America, to Europe, and the world that the world has ever faced. We have a real possibility of nuclear war. I wrote about nuclear war a bit in my books, My Awakening and Jewish Supremacism, and I pointed out that in the Cuban Missile Crisis back in the early 60s, we were in school, and every day we'd have the air raid sirens go on, I guess, to make sure that they're working well. And we were told to build fallout shelters, and most of our parents in my neighborhood of Gentilly Woods and in New Orleans, Louisiana. I went to a little school called Claiborne, and we were diligently building fallout shelters. And kids, and we did those things you see in the movies, you know, duck and cover and all that. We had drills where we would get under the desks, and we were kids. And we knew what nuclear war would be, you know, massive explosions. And for us, it was real. It was something that was certainly possible and something that we knew we might face. Not that duck and cover would have saved our ass. It wouldn't have. But we, you know, kids, they take things to heart. I don't think that most adults during that period could actually really believe that nuclear war was going to happen. And as I wrote in my books, it's because nuclear war was so unthinkable. Nuclear war, all-out nuclear war between America and Russia, the two main superpowers, and other countries as well, would be the probable end of humanity. It would certainly be the end of European humanity and also probably the Asian communities as well. The Northern Hemisphere has huge amounts of people and civilization. Not that the South doesn't, but it's far less per capita. And there's no guarantee that those lands would escape horrific problems, both radiation, real climate change of a super serious nature, pollution, maybe planet cooling to the point that it would be disastrous. The sun might not reach the Earth's surface anywhere in the world very much, but there would be a struggle for life everywhere. And adults, you know, we've had dangers of nuclear war since that time, obviously, but we tend to think things like that, well, it can't happen. It's too unthinkable. Certainly, cooler heads are going to be prevailing. But during the Cuban Missile Crisis, there was actually a case where a nuclear submarine, a Russian submarine, with nuclear-tipped missiles, was out near Cuba with orders that if they're fired upon by America, international waters, then they had a right to do so, if they were fired upon, that they would respond with a nuclear torpedo against the American ships or any other nuclear weapons necessary, which would have inevitably triggered a nuclear war with Russia. At that time, in the early 60s, it would have been almost complete and total devastation. it would have been unbelievable. Basically, almost the entirety of Americans would have lost their brother and sister and their mother and father and their sons and daughters and their relatives and their friends and their communities and any semblance of life that would have survived would have a horrendous existence. Like some of the old stories that have been written in horrible times of conquest and the hordes that came into society, it was often said that in those kinds of conditions, the living would envy the dead. And I think that's exactly what would have happened in the United States of America. The fact is, as I said, when the submarine was there, we have to thank a single submariner on a Russian ship that kept the world from nuclear annihilation. Because to launch the nuclear weapon, they had to have a unanimous agreement of the three top sailors on the submarine itself. And one submariner, Russian guy, he should be celebrated. If anybody ever deserves a prize or recognition, it was him, by the entire world, because single-handedly he said, no, I think we better wait. We better not do this. And he caused the nuclear weapon not to be used. That saved the people in my city of New Orleans and the people in New York and Chicago and Los Angeles and, oh, for that matter, Toronto, Canada, London, England, Berlin, Germany, Moscow, around the world. Hey, Dr. Slaughter, are you there?
I am here.
Glad to have you on. I was just referring to the fact that in my books, if you remember, I wrote about the fact that when we were kids, we were doing the duck and cover just like in the old movies from the 50s. I was in grade school in the 50s and early 60s. And in the early 60s, we were doing this. I mean, we were getting under our desks and we were, you know, tending to imagine nuclear warfare. And we were kids, and obviously we could believe it could happen. I think, as I said earlier on the program that you missed, that I think most of adult Americans didn't believe it could have happened. Which goes to show, because we came apparently, and the evidence is pretty strong, that we came within 10 minutes of going to nuclear warfare, all-out nuclear warfare with Russia.
Yeah, in the Reagan administration. And it was during the Reagan administration, at least at one point, there was a...
Well, I was talking about during the Kennedy administration was the biggest...
So, yeah, you had the
Cuban Missile Crisis.
The Cuban Missile Crisis. In the Reagan administration, there was a misreading of radar. So Reagan was told that there was incoming Soviet missile. Maybe it was a formation of geese. It was mistaken, and it really freaked out Ronald Reagan. And so Ronald Reagan suddenly went from joking about things like, evil empire. I've just signed legislation outlawing the Soviet Union. We're going to start bombing in 5 minutes. He was joking about this type of stuff in the first term. After this incident, he completely changed. And he became, he became very willing to meet frequently with Gorbachev. And Gorbachev and Reagan had agreed to completely disarm, to abolish nuclear weapons altogether. And then Caspar Weinberger and George Shultz jumped in and said, no, you can't do that. And probably some of Gorbachev's people on his side said the same thing. But in Reykjavik, Iceland, I guess that was 1986, 86 or 87. I can't remember. I think it was late 86. That was Gorbachev. And after Gorbachev and Reagan had a one-on-one meeting, they agreed to abolish nuclear weapons. So Reagan was certainly had become very alarmed by this prospect during his second term.
Yeah, and we were certainly willing to go to nuclear war simply to prevent nuclear weapons, any further nuclear weapons going to Cuba, unless those weapons were removed from Cuba, which was 90 miles from our shores. So we were willing to do that. And we were committed to doing that. And we just about did that. And the reality would be such that it would be a different world than what we have right now. And I would just tell all of you, whoever you are listening, anywhere in the sound of my voice, probably, your life would be entirely different if that war were to happen. Everything you know and knew, if you were alive then, or your life since that time, if you had life, if you were alive in this world, would be different, would be something alien and inordinately horrific in terms of what would have occurred to the world and hundreds of millions of people dead, dying, suffering, the destruction of just everything of civilization. You know, it would have fallen as hard, it would have fallen on hard on every people, but it would have fallen especially hard on Europeans, both in Russia and America and Canada, the NATO countries, Western Europe. The very heart of our people would have just been wrenched out. And it's a very important to people to understand, I think, that because I got involved in the cause as a young man, one of the things that I got involved for was because I wanted to preserve the identity, the values, the existence of my people. I didn't think that other people shouldn't exist, that other people shouldn't be free. In fact, I came more and more to embrace that principle for all people as I got older, as I evolved in my life. But one thing I knew is that we had the right for the expression of humanity that we represented. And those people out there, and I, again, almost all my followers know me and got involved with me because I was one of the first voices against the massive immigration that I knew would cause an endangerment for the existence of our people, that our people would be a lower and lower percentage of the population. And I also believe that this replacement of our people and the massive influx of non-Europeans would be manipulated by the media and by the Jewish power structure and Jewish propaganda and media to cause a shift in politics and would rebound to the benefit of Jewish power, that Jewish power would become enhanced by this. They believe this because way back in the 1970s, 80s, even before that, they said specifically that Jews like Perlmutter of the Perlmutter Institute, who was also the name of the guy who had the ADL for many years, said that for the whole century, we Jews have been nursing the idea of open borders and that to change the demographic of America so that no Nazi, that's their word for any sort of society dedicated to its own people, dedicated to Europeans having the source power for their own country, their own culture, traditions, values, family structure, religious values, all these things, that Europeans had the right to do that. And that, but you had Jews like the Perlmutter Institute, part of the ADL, associated with the ADL, saying that, you know, we're reaching the point that way back in the 80s, they wrote, you know, we're reaching the point rapidly when the idea of any sort of white racist, Nazi government was impossible. because the demographics are going to make it such. Well, we have a Nazi government today, my friends, to tell you the truth, but not Nazis like the National Socialists of Germany, that's for sure. But Nazis, as the Nazis were portrayed by the media for the last 75 years, because the National Socialists, the way they were portrayed in the movies, were murderous, they were genocidal, they were perverted, they were just incredible evil people, exploitative, harmful, ugly. And that's exactly the truth is that the image of the National Socialists, of the Nazis, as they called them, was the very worst image that Jews could create of who they considered their enemy, who they who said that Germany should be oriented toward the German people, and Italy should be oriented to the Italian people, and Spain should be oriented to the interests of the Spanish people, and all the countries of the world should have the right to be oriented to their own people and the preservation, and not some small minority who has extreme economic force or monetary force or banking power, or political power, or for that matter, media power, to twist the country away from its fundamental interests and values for its people. So I was, well known, and I've been well known for a lot of people, but around the world, and Europeans know me well. My books have sold and read by millions of people, including in Russia and throughout the European countries and in America, in many languages, by the way. And it's interesting to think about the fact that if you're European, or if you're of any race or any culture, that nuclear war has got to be off the table. Because if it happens, all your desires for your people and your immediate families and those whom you love, the if you're a man, the woman in your life, a woman of the man in your life, your family, your parents, your descendants, your children, your values, your culture, your faith, everything, it could be wiped out. Now, after all that wind up, we have a situation where Biden has basically done something that brings us closer to the possibility of a nuclear conflict than almost anything I can think of in my lifetime, where he basically changed his policy, and he's doing it right before the end of his lame duck presidency. Literally, it's going to happen, soon now, that he's going to change his policy in Ukraine, saying that the Ukrainians now are going to be allowed, are going to, we're going to fire, basically, we, because the ATACMS missiles, the long-range missiles that they can fire deep into Russia, the ATACMS missiles that can be fired into Russia are completely operated by Americans. They have to be, because the secret codes and all that for the communication, for the targeting and the satellites and everything else aren't, we can't give those codes to these other countries. America has to operate it because they have to keep those codes secret, because those codes can be used to contravene those weapons if America ever needed them. So these have to be run, targeted by Americans. Without America doing it and targeting it, it's impossible for them to even do these things. And yet, that's what's going on right now. And it's just shocking to think. So here's Russia. Imagine if Canada was controlled by a radical, anti-American party or whatever, and Canada had these long-range missiles. And what would America do? And this would be far more threatening than anything of the missiles that a few missiles that Cuba might have faced for America. Maybe if there wasn't a general war, which the whole idea, though, of nuclear assured destruction, that's supposed to prevent a war. But if that war happens, you have mutually assured destruction. So it's like we are just in a situation now that America just have told Ukraine, yeah, we'll let you use these things, but you know, you're not even going to use them. We're going to run them. We're going to target them, and we're going to attack inside the Russian nation. So this is not going to be a war of basically Russia against Ukraine, the neighbors. Well, this is going to be a war, absolutely, that's going to affect the entire Russian nation, a huge nation, of huge resources, huge population, and one that certainly feels an existential necessity to protect themselves. And the only thing that they feel that works, Putin made a red line. He said, if you use weapons of this nature and you attack deep in our country, well, we know the United States is doing it, we will, in fact, directly, they said, we will use nuclear weapons. Or we'll use certainly weapons of a legitimate coherence, let's put it this way, a legitimate equality or parity with what damage you do to us. So that means Russia can attack America directly, which is coming from America anyway, right? Attack European countries. And the idea of this spiraling out of control is great. This is one of the greatest threats we ever had. I want to play some of the tape from Napolitano's program, Judging Freedom, with Scott Ritter. And let me play that for you and for the audience, if that's okay with you. Is that good?
It sounds good.
Okay, so let's see if I can get this right one now. Let's see, right here it is. Here we go.
Make him the vice president. That did.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to skip this forward a little bit now. Try to get past the commercials on the show.
In your dollar's value. Just the cost of groceries is absurd.
Okay.
Scott Ritter, welcome here, my dear friend. What are the risks in this latest announcement out of the federal government that the United States will authorize the Ukraine military to use American weaponry to reach up to 190 miles inside of Russia?
Well, we already know what the risks are because this is the second time we've gone through this scenario. The first time, of course, was in September when Joe Biden was ready to issue such authorization on September 13th. On September 12th, the Russian President Vladimir Putin made it clear that if this were done, this would be interpreted by Russia as an act of war and would be responded in kind. On September 13th, the day Biden was going to sign off on this, he had a White House meeting with Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister. The Russian ambassador to the United Nations reiterated that if he signed that document, a declaration of war would have been signed. And this was backed up by the Russian ambassador to the United States, Anatoly Antonov, who spoke to several officials, former government officials, who called him at the behest of the Biden administration to find out, were the Russians serious? Anatoly Antonov said not only were the Russians serious, but that when this went nuclear, notice what I said, when this went nuclear, the United States would be involved. So he said there will be a nuclear war and America will be part of it. It won't be limited to Europe. Biden wisely backed down. So we know exactly what's going to happen. The Russians have not changed their posture whatsoever. If Ukraine, let me make it as clear as possible. If Ukraine uses an ATACMS missile to strike a target inside Russia, that is in Kursk Oblast, Russia will say that that's an attack by the United States and will treat it accordingly. It will be a state of war between the United States and Russia. And from what I understand, I've been in contact with sources in Moscow. But first of all, let me just say that the Russians aren't panicked. What the Russians are saying is that the decisions have already been made. Anybody who's looking for a convoy of vehicles running to the Kremlin to decide, the decision has been made. It is automatic. The moment the ATACMS is used, Russia will respond, and the response will be catastrophic for Ukraine and devastating for NATO and the United States. When I say catastrophic, Kiev will be destroyed. It won't be a nuclear weapon, but I've been told what the weapon probably will be, and it will be, it'll be a gigantic thermobaric bomb that will level downtown Kiev, killing everybody there. Russia will take Kiev off the map. And if I know this, the CIA knows this, Biden knows this, Zelensky knows this. The thing is, they think Russia's bluffing. They don't think Russia will do it. It's not a gamble I'm willing to take, because it's not just gambling away the lives, millions of lives in Kiev, but it's gambling away all of humanity. If the West is wrong and Russia's not bluffing, there will be a war, and that war will be nuclear, and we will all die.
Is the
he's got away with
this. Stop that. All right, just a sec.
For sure.
Go ahead, Doctor.
I was just going to say, Scott Ritter's got away with words. This will be a war. It will be nuclear, and we will all die.
That's pretty. That's putting it pretty blatantly, isn't it? But it's true. If there is nuclear war, we will all die. A real nuclear all-out war. And it's very hard to put a genie back in the bottle of nuclear war.
Do you think I should cancel my vacation reservations for this end of the year? I don't know. On the one hand, I mean,
I don't know. You might want to spend the time kissing your family goodbye, you know?
On the one hand, it sounds almost over the top.
There's hardly any place to run. Where are you going to run to?
It sounds almost hysterical, but the thing is, Americans have, even of our generation and certainly more recent generations, have been completely desensitized to the impact of war. So, you know, our parents' generation, I know your dad was World War II vet, mine was as well, there was at least some sort of sense of people going off to war and dying. Korean War and the Vietnam War too, people would go off and die. We haven't had a war fought on our soil since the Civil War, and really it was only the South that experienced it on their soil. So Americans really, they don't know and haven't known for many generations what it means to have a war raging all around you on your soil, in your town. We haven't known that. Europeans, throughout the first half of the 20th century, they had that experience in spades, especially the Russians. No one more so than, you know, the Russians, Ukrainians, Belarusians, because it was right there. But what's happened is, so even in our generation, I know that you weren't in the army in Vietnam, but you were over in that part of the world teaching in Laos during Vietnam. And so our generation, and I'm only because I'm kind of a nerd and I was going to anti-Vietnam War demonstration, you'd really have to be in your 70s to even remember your friends going off to war and not coming back. What it is nowadays, and since the glorious Gulf War of 1991 with George Bush, everything has – you go overseas, kill lots of people. The first Gulf War, you could maybe even say it was a victory, but most people just watch it on TV. But it's just Americans going overseas, causing a lot of chaos, actually accomplishing nothing. But, you know, for at least in the early days of the presence of troops in Iraq or Afghanistan, you get all this really cool video. Oh, did you see that missile? It went straight down a chimney and then blew it up the building. That was awesome. And so it's like a video game. It's like watching the NFL on TV. People have become completely desensitized to it. They're completely divorced from the reality of what war is in America. And so they can have this callous attitude. And it takes somebody like Scott Ritter to try to you know, smack these people upside the head so they have an idea. Oh, actually – a war isn't just something you watch on TV. It's potentially something that could kill us. And so I thank him for I thank him for his service. When he was in the Marines, the hell with that. I don't care about that. But I thank him for what he's doing now.
Yeah, he really is doing an incredible job in waking us up to these insanities going on right now. It's just, it's unbelievable what's happening in terms of our society and the danger to everything that matters, anything that really matters. I mean, the reality of a nuclear war is so shocking that it's like it's beyond anything else we can conceive of. It's the end of everything, basically, by the way. So I'm going to play now so Trump himself, which I was very surprised about this, got very, very upset about this. And he said, made a major talk directly to the American people. And he said, this is the closest we've ever been to a nuclear war. And there's a real danger of doing this, which would end us all. And we have to stop this. And he said, we have to have a cessation of this entire conflict in Ukraine. And by the way, the Ukrainian war, for those of you who've never heard my show, I think most of you have heard my show, obviously, the Ukraine war has nothing to do with anything for Ukraine. It's literally destroying a whole generation of Ukrainians. These young Ukrainian men, in fact, if you look at the demographics, they did some studies. And if you look at the 20 to 30 age group, 2018 to 30 age group, it's just a big hole. That's how many Ukrainians have died. People like Douglas McGregor says that there's 600,000 casualties. There may be argument about some of those numbers, but that's a lot of Ukrainians. This is not a Ukrainian war for Ukraine. It's destroying Ukraine. It always has been a war. And the interesting thing is the Jewish extremists who control us. And don't forget Jeffrey Sachs, the famous economist, and he's gotten so many awards for his humanitarian and other work around the world. I mean, I don't think the guy's got enough shelf to put the trophies and awards and plaques and everything that he's gotten. But he wrote a fantastic article saying the same people behind the Iraq war, which was based completely on lies, a war for Israel, the same neocons, and then he identified them in the article, every single one of them that he identified, the people who orchestrated the Iraq war, were all Jewish neocons. He gave their names. And he said, these are the same people who gave us the Iraq war, which ultimately cost us $8 trillion, according to one big research group out of Brown University, and cost us thousands of lives, American lives, as well as probably a million people in both Iraq and Afghanistan and others, and has been so destructive. He says it's the same neocons. And the neocons also are documented by Jewish publications in Israel, such as Haaretz, which says that in fact, in an article called White Man's Burden, which was very ironic, saying it's like the white man's burden to fight these wars for Israel. That's what it is. It's the white man's burden. Jews didn't have to fight the Iraq war against their enemy, Saddam Hussein. They just got America through their influence and their control over the American media, their control over the American government, to go use our blood, our money, and maybe $8 trillion it's been over these years, $8 trillion. That's five times the entirety of the budget. It's five times the budget of the entirety of the United States government in the beginning of this century. And this was a 2003 war. It's five times that. It's like five full years of spending for our entire government. And people talk about the $100 billion in Ukraine, or they talk about the power of AIPAC in terms of money. Think about that for a second. It's just crazy. So let me play Trump. If you're ready, I think you are. And let's let the audience hear this, and I look forward to your comments about what Trump says.
Along the lines of the one that I just read aloud, let's watch it, Chris.
We have never been closer to World War III than we are today under Joe Biden. A global conflict between nuclear-armed powers would mean death and destruction on a scale unmatched in human history. It would be nuclear Armageddon. Nothing is more important than avoiding that nightmare. We will avoid it, but we need new leadership. Every day this proxy battle in Ukraine continues, we risk global war. We must be absolutely clear that our objective is to immediately have a total cessation of hostilities. All shooting has to stop. This is the central issue. We need peace without delay. In addition, there must also be a complete commitment to dismantling the entire globalist neocon establishment that is perpetually dragging us into endless wars, pretending to fight for freedom and democracy abroad, while they turn us into a third world country and a third world dictatorship right here at home. The State Department, the defense bureaucracy, the intelligence services, and all of the rest need to be completely overhauled and reconstituted to fire the deep staters and put America first. We
boy,
have to put...
Boy. I gotta say it. I couldn't have said any better myself. And I've been talking about this for years, but he said we must dismantle these globalist neocons. And as Jeffrey Sachs writes about the neocons, and by the way, Piers Morgan was saying that when Bilzerian, and that's Dan Bilzerian, who was on his show, and he called him anti-Semitic simply for pointing out the genocide of what's going on in Gaza, and the fact that Judaism and Zionism, and they are related, they are not two separate entities. They are part and parcel of the same, what are you going to say? It's the same regime and the same ideology of Jewish supremacy, genocide, murder, and control. And it, this supremacy exists not just in Israel against the Palestinians. This supremacy exists in the American media, in American fundraising. Influence of Jews vastly in Europe and other countries of the world. And they have infiltrated just about everything you can think of. And the truth is that there's no greater danger. But Trump was amazing. He said, we have got to dismantle the globalist neo-con deep state that's leading us to utter disaster. What do you think about that? I didn't expect this from Trump. At the same time, I wonder if, I know it certainly wouldn't be an intention. Well, he's not trying to commit suicide, but he may just have signed his death warrant because there's a lot of danger of him saying these things now before he actually takes office. Why don't you comment on that, sir?
Okay, so Trump definitely has some good instincts. He has some good intentions. There's a tendency for people to look at Donald Trump, maybe just look at the last thing he's done or the last few things, just pick this or pick that and turn him into kind of a two-dimensional character. He's actually very complex, and he's got a lot of different aspects to him. And he, you know, is he narcissistic? Does he care a great deal about himself? Yeah, sure. I think those are probably very legitimate criticisms of him. But he does seem to have also, at the same time, a real concern for the American people and for humanity in general. I think he has some very good instincts, some. And compared to a Clinton or a Bush or somebody like that, I mean, you're not... Those people were complete sellouts. Donald Trump's not a complete sellout. He may be a partial sellout, but he's not a complete sellout. And it's really hard to know what direction he's going to take things in. I thought during his first term that he was trying to do some divide and conquer on the Jews. I said this frequently, that it seemed as if he was you know, while attacking, well, that he was making alliances with Wall Street Jews and with, you know, Likudnik Israel Firsters in order to at least gain some protection on his, you know, his flank, his Jewish flank, gain some protection so that he could attack the Jewish priorities of mass immigration and also attack the
which is
Jewish.
Right, it's right at the top of the Jewish agenda next to Israel, right?
And attack
the Jewish agenda, correct?
And I'm trying to finish the sentence, and attack the Jewish stronghold of the mass media.
Yeah, and it's right top of their agenda. Their agenda, in my idea, is first of all, you control the government through campaign money, and they completely dominate, have supremacy there to control the media, because there's no bigger influence in society than that. In fact, the biggest media on the earth, on this planet, are things like Alphabet and Facebook and these other groups that have billions and billions of dollars worth of contracts with the Mossad and the Israeli government. They're just as guilty of the genocide in Gaza as the Jewish army on the floor there. But it's really shocking to see Trump come out on this. But at the same time, there's very big danger, isn't there, in terms of Trump? But let me ask you a question. This is a thought, and maybe I should pose this in a moment, but I'll ask this question kind of as a preface for a second here. One of the scenarios that I thought about was a possibility. It seemed like a remote possibility until this statement. But one of the possibilities was that, and first and foremost, I think Trump understood Putin and his history. He understood what happened in Russia. The reason why Jews lost out in Russia, because not one of their own, because Stalin wasn't a Jew, but he was a Georgian, started to identify with the Russian people, and came to believe that these Zionist Jews had no loyalty to Russia, no loyalty to the state, no loyalty to him, and obviously couldn't confront them at all in the beginning. In fact, there were Jewish factions fighting over the control of Russia. And then you had Putin come in, and he acted like he was kind of a friend of Berezovsky, the Wolf of the Kremlin, and Grzinski was also head of the largest Jewish organization in Russia. And then you had Khodorkovsky and these other Jews who supported the stealing of the entirety of the wealth of Russia for these Jewish power structure. And he acted like, well, he's going along with them. But when he finally got to the presidency of Russia, he called all these oligarchs in and said, listen, this isn't going on anymore. If you hurt the Russian people, if you steal from the Russian people, you're gone. We're going to prosecute you. We're going to imprison you. You're over. You're gone. And I was, you know, it's almost like, and this is what I think a lot of the Jewish super elite, who are the more intelligent, because the people that are more cerebral in their thinking and more intelligent in their thinking, they're not going to be swayed by Trump's emotional defense of Jews and Israel and how much he loves Israel and his son-in-law and all that crap. But they're going to be swayed by, look what happened to Putin. Putin acted kind of the same way at first, but then Putin went against them, and now they hate Putin, and just like they came to hate Stalin. So, you know, is it possible that Trump could be taking the same kind of path? Maybe he learned to take the same kind of path that Putin took. What do you think? Well, we'll be happy to embrace him if he follows through on those statements. If he follows through on dismantling the insane Jewish neocons who are controlling this country, leading us to destruction. And like you said, it was so true. Not only are they leading us to countless wars, which are the most expensive, it's actually the most money-costing aspect. And this entire war machine and wars, there's no other factor that's even close in terms of the economic impact on the American people, the American middle class, on the robbery of our American people for these Jewish power structure. I mean, you can't make it up when you talk about $8 trillion in a war that was based on lies, like in Iraq. So it's pretty amazing when, and again, it seems true too, in a sense, that in reality, if he would have said that kind of speech before the election, I don't think you would have had the support, even the little over 20%. He only got about 20% of the vote. Right. Again, there's some emotional Jews. I don't think he even got those votes.
This is the thing. You and I, and a lot of other people on the radio, I know for myself, I try to be as accurate as possible. I try to be as blunt as possible. I think you do too. And we can be completely transparent. We can be completely blunt. We can say exactly what we say. But just put yourself in the position of somebody who's just been elected president. You've got a Jewish power structure that has infiltrated really every aspect of the American government, of the media, the intelligence services. It's everywhere. And let's just say you want to take back the country from Jewish power, but you've got their ears and eyes everywhere. They're ensconced everywhere. And so then you really need a strategy, and the strategy isn't necessarily going to be being blunt and open and honest about everything that you think, right?
Right.
I mean, it's not.
Not in politics. That doesn't work in politics, for sure. Because you have to put this coalition together for success.
So, he's got, assuming that he does want to take back the country, and I think there's a very significant chance that he really does want to take it back the country. Maybe he's a complete sellout, like some people say. But I think people who say things like that say it's really simplistic. I think he's much more complex. And I'm not going Q either, like, oh, he's got the plan. No. I think he's kind of learning as he goes along, and he's willing to make compromises. He's got his own personal interests. It's all very complex. But if you wanted to take back power, it would be difficult. And, you can go too far too fast. And you're bringing up the scenario where he makes statements. And then what happens? Does he get assassinated even?
If he gets assassinated, then who knows who's going to be president? Because they can do all sorts of manipulation then.
If he were to get assassinated before the Electoral College voted,
you got to go fast now. We're almost out of time.
Yeah, it could be anything. If he gets assassinated after the Electoral College votes, but before the votes are certified, it could also be, a lot of things could happen.
One of the key things about this statement too was it was brilliant, because not only did he talk about this war and the danger it is to ourselves, every American, and all of humanity, obviously. But also, he immediately dovetailed this, these neocon globalists. They also are the ones that are orchestrating the destruction of the American people, the traditional Americans that created the country, and the replacement of those Americans, and making this country a complete tool of Zionist power. I guess that's the swan song. Doctor, thank you so much for being with me, my friend. How can people find you on Republic?
Republicbroadcasting.org, and you can find my show, National Bugle Radio. Go to the archives or look for the host section, and you'll find me.
Oh, that's great. We appreciate you very, very much. And folks, you can support me at davidduke.com, davidduke.com. Or you can also go to my Gab at Real David Duke, at Real David Duke on gab.com. And also, you can go to Odyssey, which has got all my old videos, odyssey.com. And that's at Real David Duke as well. Now, finally, the last word I want to say on this is that it is absolutely vital that we begin to understand the nuances of all these things. And as people know, I've been talking about Dan Bilzerian and his appearance on Piers Morgan, and how this has triggered many others now to understand the reality that Judaism and Zionism are not two really separate things. They're very much related all the way up and down. That Judaism, which is very different, by the way, than Christianity, it is no relationship to it in so many ways. Christianity is a message for salvation for the world and every human being, but Judaism is about Jewish supremacy. That's just the reality. So we got to realize what's going on there. And as Balzerian and I have pointed out, Judaism and Zionism are not very far apart. Zionism itself is the most racist ideology of government the world's ever seen. And it's really a program and a policy of Jewish supremacy, not just in Palestine, but globally. That's the reality that we have facing the world today. And Judaism itself is a supremacist ideology, that's more racist than any other ideology or religion in the history of the world. Those are facts, folks, and that's what we have to confront if we're going to solve the problem. As Balzerian said on Piers Morgan, Jewish supremacism is the greatest threat to the world and every human being in it, including to the Jewish people themselves. I love you. Go to davidduke.com, support our efforts. Go to my Gab at Real David Duke and my Odyssey at Real David Duke and davidduke.com for a great source on these issues. Love y'all. Bye-bye now.